This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. In his State of the Union address last week, President Obama talked about the importance of pre-kindergarten education, and he offered a sweeping policy proposal to expand it across the land.
Tonight, I propose working with states to make high-quality preschool available to every single child in America. That's something we should be able to do.
The proposal has sparked a loud debate from states like Georgia and Oklahoma, which already invest in expanded pre-K education, to here in Massachusetts, where Governor Deval Patrick offered a similar plan in his State of the Commonwealth speech last month.
Toddlers, infants, 30,000 of them are on the wait list for early education opportunities. Let's ensure that every child in Massachusetts has access to high-quality early education.
Patrick wants to spend $350 million on pre-K education. By some estimates, the president's plan would cost $100 billion. That's billion with a B, over 10 years, which is why it has ignited a big debate and some big questions like, can we afford it? And is it worth it? And if so, how do we know that?
So listeners, those are some of the questions we want you to consider. Do you favor expanding publicly funded pre-K education? Do you think it delivers the promised bang for the buck? Or would it be better to limit it to those who need it the most? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston.
And joining us now is Amy O'Leary with the advocacy organization Strategies for Children. She's the director of their Early Education for All campaign. And Amy O'Leary, great to see you. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for coming in. Also with us is Jim Sturgis. He's executive director of the Pioneer Institute, a Boston-based public policy think tank. And Jim Sturgis, welcome back to Radio Boston. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
So Amy, let me start with you. We heard from Governor Patrick and then from President Obama. So let's start with some of the numbers here in Massachusetts. How widely available is pre-K education, and how do you define the need to expand it? I mean, how does it need to be expanded?
Well, this is certainly an exciting time for early education, and I feel like this is an issue whose time has finally come. As we've heard, this is a bipartisan issue. Governors across the country have made this a priority, and our own Governor Patrick has proposed significant investments. If we look at the landscape of Massachusetts, right now 70% of 3, 4, and 5-year-olds have access to high-quality early education. In Massachusetts, we have really laid a strong foundation with the support of the legislature and the governor to build a system to ensure high quality.
To high quality for everyone, though. You favor pre-K education for everyone, right? So how specifically are you going about achieving that?
Well, the reality is 70% of preschoolers are already in a program. We know that 61% of children with all parents in the workforce under 7 in Massachusetts. So we know this is an issue that's far and wide in many of the communities across the state. And the strong foundation we have laid, the first Department of Early Education and Care in the Commonwealth, we really looked at the structure, the governance, and how the funding has been flowing. And right now we know the funding has been cut $80 million since fiscal year 09. And we also know that Massachusetts puts a relatively small amount of state investments into the system.
So you would like to see, I mean, first of all, just to be clear, this $350 million that the governor is proposing, would that bring you to the level that you would like to see pre-K education? Would it do what would it provide universal pre-K education?
I think so. The proposal for FY14 is $131 million, and it's divided into two of the buckets. One is access. We have had a frozen access in Massachusetts, meaning that children cannot get into the system because of the cuts since FY09. So the governor's plan first ensures that children can access early education, and then the second part of the plan, a critical part of the plan, is ensuring quality.
All right. Well, two big questions. So, Jim Sturgis, let me come to you. Your response, and let me play a clip actually from the president of the president's State of the Union address, where he's talking about the benefits of early pre-K education. Let's just listen to what he says.
Every dollar we invest in high quality early childhood education can save more than $7 later on by boosting graduation rates, reducing teen pregnancy, even reducing violent crime.
So there's a case for the expansion of pre-K education. Do you agree with that? Is that a good rationale to make these investments?
Well, first and foremost, when the president says $1 investment for 7 paid back, that's not, I want listeners to understand, that does not mean that the program pays for itself. That's $7 over the lifetime of that individual. That's a study that comes out of a Chicago longitudinal study.
Right.
And I guess one of the things I would say is what the president has said about boosting graduation rates, about reducing teen pregnancy, these are things that we've not seen in any federal early ed program. Now, I'm not trying to say that Head Start is all pre-K programs. It certainly is not. Mm-hmm. But we do have a 48-year history with Head Start. We have spent $180 billion on Head Start. And there was a study that came out the Friday before Christmas because they wanted to bury the results, which said that there was really no long-term impact on the cognitive abilities of participating children. It said that it did not improve their access to health care. It also said that in terms of behavior and emotional well-being, whether evaluated by the student or by teachers, there was no benefit.
So is the bottom line, Jim Sturgis, then, that this is just this would be money poorly spent?
As with all things, the truth is more complicated than that. Now, when Amy and I were talking a little bit before, I was looking through some of her materials. She's for high quality early education. High quality early education can have an impact. John Silber, former president of BU, was a big proponent of early education, and he had a very particular way of thinking about it, which is about high quality content, academic content, focusing kids on structure, all kinds of things like that. With that in place, in a targeted approach, it can be helpful. Mm-hmm. So there is not, it's not like you just fall into, this is just junk, or it's something we absolutely have to do. One of the things that concerns me about the governor's plan is that it's for universal pre-K. I believe the president's plan in terms of targeting children who are at 200% of federal poverty.
That's correct.
Or less,
his would
is
focus
better
on low income and low to middle low income people who are 200% of poverty. Right.
Right.
So, Amy, respond to Jim's concern about the governor's proposal focusing on everyone, and couldn't you argue that why not just focus it on the people who need it? I mean, because if you create a universal program in which everyone can go, then surely you're going to attract kids that perhaps don't actually need it because they come from families who can provide enrichment in other ways.
I think the governor's vision is for high-quality universal access. I think even in his plan, he talks about starting with the lowest income, looking at the gateway cities, the wait list, which his proposal talks about getting children off the wait list. All of those markers are to support children from low-income households. So we know that this is where the place to start. We know the research tells us that the most benefits come from children who need it the most. But we know that everyone benefits from a high-quality early learning experience. We also
But how do we know that? Do we really know that every... I mean, have we really had studies that have looked at the effects of universal pre-K and do we really know that it would benefit everyone? I mean, because it's an important question to ask if we're talking about spending tens of million dollars at the state level or billions at the federal level.
Right. I think we haven't had any longitudinal studies of Head Start, which is the federal program which Jim talked about. We do have the big three studies, the Perry Preschool, the Abbasidarian, and the Chicago Parent Home Child Program, Centers Program that Jim mentions, and those were focused on low income. I think we don't ask whether first grade benefits all children or second grade benefits all children. We, you know, education in this Commonwealth, we still have a challenge. We have a persistent achievement gap that is not just regulated to the low income districts. The achievement gap is universal across the Commonwealth, and if we're serious about closing it, then we need to invest where it makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Jim?
Well, I'd say at least, for example, if you think about the Abbasidarian example that Amy cites, that was a program that cost $90,000 per child. It was a multi-year intervention. It was not a single-year intervention, which pre-K programs tend to be. I'd also note that the Head Start evaluations are multi-year, and they show that, frankly, by the time you're in third grade, the academic benefits have dissipated fully. I would also note that in Oklahoma and in Georgia, the advantages that have accrued with that, take a look at the performance data of students in Oklahoma and Georgia. That's just not there. So I'm not trying to pour cold water on the entire idea. What I'm trying to say is you have to be really careful, really target. You have to make sure you have a great plan, and it has to be implemented well. If you look at the federal intervention in K-12, over the past 40 years. They have not driven any improvement. And in fact, outside of Massachusetts and a handful of other states, public schools, K-12 schools, are a basket case in this country. More federal intervention that says, let's graft onto that something like Head Start does not seem to be, to me, to be a very wise investment.
So what would your approach be then? Is it that just more targeted pre-K education on those populations that need it, more careful spending, more targeted spending?
First and foremost, I think what the president's saying about targeting here is good. I think we have a little more target on some more at-risk students. Start there. Second thing is, when you have federal money or public money, state money, flowing into this, what you do is you displace the current number of folks who are already accessing early education. And my fear is that the private options that many of the parents avail themselves of are of higher quality than many of the publicly provided programs. So I'd like to see, for example, a tax credit program or something to make sure that the poor can use something similar to a tax credit program to give them choice. They can vote with their feet to where they want to put their children. That would be, I think, very good. I think the last thing is the president's talked a little bit about making sure we have high quality standards for content and all the rest. Anything the federal government does has to do that. What I would say with a big, big caveat here is the federal government has just finished pushing for national standards, which remove a lot of literature from early grade reading. That, the research literature is clear on, reduces the richness, the breadth, and the depth of children's vocabulary. If that's their idea of high quality standards, I don't want to see it.
Mm. Isn't it important, though? I mean, you cite the Head Start study showing that the longitudinal study on that didn't show that Head Start made a big difference by the time kids got to third grade. But wouldn't the federal standards and requiring teachers to meet certain benchmarks, wouldn't that help raise the standard of pre-K education?
It could. Mm-hmm. Big open question. And I would say the same thing about Massachusetts' own programs with early education. We've not seen a longitudinal study done here. We've seen some studies early on about implementation after the 2005 law. But seeing really high-quality randomized testing of students to make sure that if we're investing in this, I mean, you invest in this, you're not going to invest in something else. So we want to make sure we're putting the beans where they actually will do the most good.
Let me bring another voice into this conversation. She's Barbara Beatty. She's a professor of education at Wellesley College. She's author of the book Preschool Education in America. She's been covering this issue, following this issue for a long, long time. And Professor Beatty, welcome to Radio Boston. It's great to have you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
I'd love to sort of get your long view of history on this. You followed this debate for a very long time. What's your response, first of all, to the sort of national conversation we're having in the wake of the president's proposal? What's your response?
Well, this has actually been a very long controversy, 150 years, in fact, since the first public kindergarten started in Boston in 1860. And it's been a long, slow slog, and cost versus benefits have been the issue all the way along. So none of this is new. And looking to the way, if you think about it, to get public kindergartens, President Obama's proposals for four-year-olds, kindergartens was to get five-year-olds, public support for five-year-olds. That took both national, state, and local buying in, and it didn't happen quickly. We still don't have universal kindergartens, in fact.
So what's the trick there, then? I mean, how do you get that 100% buy-in from the local level?
At the local level, I think you've got to have support. You've got to have the reaching across the aisle at all levels. But to do that, there are some obstacles and there are some issues that are going to have to be overcome both outside the preschool community. And what we're not talking about yet in this conversation, and what I'd like to add, is there are some obstacles and there's controversy within the preschool community itself.
We'll talk a little more about that. I'm not sure what you're referring to.
I'm actually referring to what Jim mentioned about Dr. Silber's idea that high quality equaled high academic content. And within the preschool community, that is an enormously controversial idea. there, if you look at the fact sheet on President Obama's program, he mentions rigorous curriculum, evaluation and review of programs, rigorous benchmarks and standards, well-aligned system. He's talking about coordinating the new early childhood programs with the Common Core standards. And I agree with Jim that there's a real problem with, there were some real problems with the Common Core standards. So, and a problem that Jim didn't mention is that a lot of people within the preschool community think that they are developmentally inappropriate. That pushing academics on young children essentially is going to make kindergarten the new first grade. And that it's not, that young children need time for play as well as for emergent literacy.
Sure. Amy O'Leary, let me get you to respond to those concerns.
Sure. Well, I don't have 150 years of history. I do come at this work as a former preschool teacher and program director. And I believe that this is really our chance to get this right. In Massachusetts, we have a mixed delivery system that includes where parents put their young children. And we have worked to increase standards, to help educators go back to school, to define what quality means, to support teachers. You know, when I started as a preschool teacher in Boston, I made $16,000 a year. This remains a challenge. Our state has not invested as much as the research tells us that we need to invest. This is our chance to get it right. And working with the field, I have been so encouraged talking with early educators who, you know, at the age of 60 are going back to school to further their education so they can bring that information back into the classroom. We talk a lot about developmentally appropriate assessment. And that's when you walk into an early education classroom, you might see playing, you see students at the sand table, you see reading corners. It doesn't look like a traditional K-12 classroom. We know that this is how young children learn, and we need to get this right and be vigilant about ensuring that developmentally appropriate practice is a key part of this proposal.
Amy, let me ask you about some information that's on your website. Your campaign claims that investing in high-quality early education produces a 10 to 16% rate of return. I'm wondering where that number comes from. I mean, how do you measure that and where that number comes from?
So that is based on the Nobel Prize-winning economist James Heckman and other leading economists who calculate this return. And we know that that's a return to the individual. To, you know, you're 40% less likely to be referred to special ed. You're 30% more likely to graduate from high school. Twice as likely to attend college, more likely to have health insurance, which we know that is a huge cost driver in our state right now. So we know if you're more likely to have health insurance, you're saving the state money. And it's also the return of on crime and risky behaviors. Children are less likely to exhibit those behaviors as they continue on.
Barbara Beatty, I'm just wondering, you know, when you hear Amy talking about those potential benefits, we heard last week as well President Obama talking about these benefits. I'm just wondering, I mean, sort of from my gut, it seems hard to question the wisdom of getting more kids into pre-K. But hearing these claims, I'm wondering if there's a risk here that we're overselling the potential good that pre-K can do. What do you think?
I agree. But first, I want to say that, you know, I've been, I also was a kindergarten teacher, Amy. I taught in the Boston Public Schools, and I taught Boston's first all-day kindergarten. So we need to be thinking about full-day kindergarten as well, which have been cut in some places. So I'm an advocate. I'm cautiously optimistic.
You're a cautious advocate and cautiously optimistic.
I'm an advocate.
I see.
Cautiously optimistic.
Gotcha.
And Jim is absolutely right. We've got to get it right. It's got to be a great plan. It's got to be implemented well. But I agree, Anthony, totally. In the past, we have oversold this. We claimed, in part, it's understandable. It's a way of getting funding. We claimed, there were claims that Head Start would cure poverty. One program alone, we can't put all of this on the backs of young children and teachers and their teachers. We're expecting all kinds of huge social problems to be solved by one more year of preschool education. We need to be very cautious about making those kinds of claims. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be trying to do it. I'm enormously energized by President Obama's proposal. I'm hoping this time, we've tried and tried in the past, and it's always been last in, first out.
Well, listeners, we're talking about the pros and cons of expanding pre-K education. Both the president made that proposal, and it's also being proposed here in Massachusetts. We'd love to get you involved in this conversation. Let's go to Megan, who's calling from Lawrence. Hi, Megan. You're on the air.
Hi.
Yes, please. You're on the air, Megan. What are your thoughts?
I teach 8th grade special ed in inner city schools, and I've taught multiple grades. And it's undeniable the benefits of literacy and the kids who come into those kindergarten and first grade classrooms with absolutely no pre-reading skills, where the kids who did go to preschool or some kind of educational setting at all, really, before that first experience, they come in holding a book the right way, reading from left to right, among other things, knowing some letters or all the letters. It's just a huge difference, and it changes the differentiation within the classroom.
So, Megan, we get your point, and we're glad you called, and there's a vote for expanded pre-K education. Let's take another call. Paul is calling from Andover. Paul, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd just like to make a couple of points. In Andover, I'm a resident there, and I have a child that's just about to go into the kindergarten system there. And in Andover, they charge for kindergarten, and you're not even guaranteed to get full-day kindergarten, from what I understand. Now, I've been paying for my child to go to preschool all along, and I think I'm in a really, you know, very good quality system, and I moved to Andover specifically for the school system. But we're going for a system now that is pre-K, paying for that through the state system, and we're not even guaranteeing communities that children that are in communities to get kindergarten without charging for it. How can you move into pre-K until you make it mandatory to offer K to everybody?
It's a great point. It's a great question. Barbara Beatty, you brought this up a moment ago, that we're still trying to accomplish universal kindergarten in the state.
We are. And the answer, it's not an easy answer. It's going to be a long, tough slog. The answer is we have to go town by town. That's the way the National Kindergarten Association finally got close to universal kindergarten, and I totally agree, we don't have it. But it's town by town, it's school board by school board convincing local taxpayers that their hard-earned money is worth being invested, and I do believe it is, but it's got to be in high-quality programs. Yes, it's going to be expensive, but it's got to be done at the local level, and it's going to take that kind of effort with local advocates and conversation and reaching across the aisle locally.
Let's get another call. Sam is calling from Charlestown. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. Happy to do it.
I do really appreciate this conversation that's been going on lately, and I appreciate that it comes from the educational perspective, but this is also an economic development issue that I'd like to bring up. We are very fortunate. We were blessed with twins, and that came with double cost of daycare and thus preschool, and I went back to work after maternity leave, and we were a two-income family because we live in a high cost of living area, and we were running a deficit. So I think of the single moms and other women that are out there that just won't be able to go back to work after they have children or for a number of years if there isn't more of an expanded pre-K. I don't want to mix in daycare with this issue, but
It sounds like that's a real concern of yours. Jim Sturgis, let me ask you about that. I mean, Sam's there is sort of talking about the stress on parents trying to go back to work. Is it fair? Is it appropriate to think about pre-K in that context, that parents just need this support?
It's absolutely fair. And in fact, the Massachusetts department is called Early Education and Care for specifically that reason. I would say that look, this is something that I'm a strong believer that giving parents choices and having the state government, it's in our Constitution that we cherish education. The state does have a duty in making sure that parents don't have to struggle to do that. That can be done, in my view, through tax treatments and giving people facilitations, exemptions to do that. But as we even think about Paul's call in Andover before, mm-hmm. he chose that program. And as I believe Barbara was saying before, the whole mechanism of having to go town by town, that's actually a healthy process because it means that parents are wedded to and hold accountable the system for improvements. That said, should we just fund a monolithic system that's determined in terms of the scope and the developmental structure that it takes from the state or from the feds? I really don't believe so. I really believe that even in my family, I know one daughter would have liked a lot of structure, and another daughter really did not need that. It was actually better for her not to have that kind of academic structure. So I think you need to put parents in the driver's seat to choose what it is, make sure they have the ability to do that. That does not mean a big government-run program. Mm.
Well, Amy O'Leary with Education for All campaign, let me sort of give the last word to you in this segment. Respond to Jim Sturgis' point there that what we don't need is this sort of one size fits all, but, you know, really tailoring it town by town, family by family almost.
I think we are on the edge of a huge opportunity, and this is really about reframing about how we're using public resources. As Barbara mentioned, we can't just depend on one more year of pre-K to do this alone. This is about building a strong system that is aligned with the early grades, aligned with parent choice. We know that we want to give our children in Massachusetts and across the country the strongest start that they deserve. And this is a thoughtful way to start getting there.
Well, listeners, the conversation continues. You can continue on Facebook at Radio Boston as well as at radioboston.org. Amy O'Leary, Director of Early Education for All campaign at Strategies for Children, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Jim Sturgis, Executive Director of the Pioneer Institute, thank you for your thoughts. It's always great having you. And Barbara Beatty, Professor of Education at Wellesley College and author of Preschool Education in America. Barbara Beatty, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, our Common Health segment, Things You May Not Know About ADHD. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.